Ayn Rand died in 1982, but now she's making a comeback. Maybe you've heard the rallying cry of Tea Party conservatives about going Galt. It's a reference to John Galt, the hero of Rand's epic novel Atlas Shrugged, who leads a revolt against big government. Ayn Rand herself was a great champion of capitalism and the virtues of selfishness. Here's how she talked about it back in a 1959 interview with Mike Wallace.
I'm challenging the moral code of altruism, the precept that man's moral duty is to live for others. That is what most people believe today.
Well, yes, we're taught to feel concerned for our fellow man, to feel responsible for his welfare, to feel that we are, as religious people might put it, children under God and responsible one for the other. Now, why do you rebel? What's wrong with this philosophy?
But that is what, in fact, makes man a sacrificial animal, that man must work for others, concern himself with others, or be responsible for them. I say that man is entitled to his own happiness, and that he must achieve it himself.
Over the years, Ayn Rand has often been written off as a marginal figure, even a crackpot. But her novels The Fountainhead and Atlas Shrugged still sell hundreds of thousands of copies every year. And Rand herself is now the subject of a new biography by Ann Heller. And Strange Champs asked Heller why Ayn Rand has such enduring appeal.
Young people like her. And they especially like The Fountainhead because it celebrates individualism and not compromising with mediocrity or social expectations. And Atlas Shrugged is a book that seems to contain an entire philosophy. For example, it defines reality as that which you can see and touch and feel. It tells us how we learn, how we should think about sex and romance, what money is for. It's full of little lectures that tell you how to think about the world.
Now, are you one of those people who discovered Ayn Rand in adolescence?
No, I didn't. I didn't read Ayn Rand until a few years ago, actually. Somebody sent me a long passage from Atlas Shrugged that is called The Money Speech. It's a defense of money as being at the root of all good. And I thought it was shocking. But as I read along, it was also very well argued and well written. So I decided that maybe I ought to read Ayn Rand and see what it was all about.
And did you become an admirer?
I became a qualified admirer. I admire her emphasis in everything she writes on individual liberties and how fragile they can be. And I admire the literary mastery that allows her to integrate rather difficult ideas into a rollicking plot that never stops. I do want to add that I'm not an admirer of her harshness and her lack of thinking about the social contract, what we all need to do with each other in order to live happily in society.
Now, Ayn Rand is best known for her passionate belief in capitalism, to the point where she had a kind of signature pin. She used to wear a great big gold dollar sign. Why was she so convinced that capitalism was the best form of social organization?
The dollar pin was given to her by some of her admirers, and the dollar sign signified for her, she used to say, free markets and free minds. Capitalism is the only economic system or social system that both depends on individual liberties, the ownership of property, the choice of what to do for a living, and reinforces individual liberties. So she thought it was the only moral social system in the world.
She was such a complex character. I mean, a woman who was brilliant, driven, could be cruel, self-absorbed, self-obsessed, boastful, also could be vulnerable at the same time. A really fascinating character. We should talk a bit about her background. Born in Russia and lived through the Bolshevik Revolution, which marked her in many ways.
Yes, very strongly. She was 12 years old in 1917, and Lenin led his troops, such as they were, into St. Petersburg, where she lived. And she saw a lot of the early days of the revolution happen in front of her apartment building. So that, as you can imagine, stayed with her all her life. And she made up her mind as she looked around that it wasn't fair. Her father's store was closed. He was a pharmacist. He had worked very hard for that store. And she made up her mind that it wasn't fair for some people to take what other people had earned just because they didn't have it and it wasn't equal.
What was Ayn Rand like personally?
People often said, and she said herself, that she detested small talk and social conversation. So she was often silent in her younger years before people talked to her about her own work. And she said that she knew that was a social fault. She had no friends as a child because she only wanted to talk about serious things. But once she got to talking about what interested her, she was evidently mesmerizing. There are all kinds of stories about men in the 30s and 40s gathering around her at parties to listen to what she was saying.
She was serious-minded, drawn to philosophy, a fierce argumentation.
Mm-hmm.
I've read that people who were friends of hers claimed that she never lost an argument.
Never lost an argument. One of them says that there were bodies strewn all over the argumentative battlefield with Ayn Rand.
And she liked to cut to the chase in conversations, even with people she had never even met before. Is it true that on meeting a new acquaintance, she would say to them, "Tell me your premises"?
Yes, indeed. That's a by phrase in Atlas Shrugged. She said to William F. Buckley the first time she met him, "You are too intelligent to believe in God." He later said that was, that was quite an icebreaker.
There's a funny story you tell that's become sort of a legend in publishing circles, that when she turned in her manuscript of Atlas Shrugged to her publisher, it was Bennett Cerf, I think, who had told her that he abhorred her philosophy, and he wanted to cut some of John Galt's long speech at the end, and she refused.
She refused, and she said in her thick Russian accent, "Would you cut the Bible?" And in his memoirs, he said he threw up his hands, and that was the end of that argument. But he made her agree to give up 7 cents a copy for all the extra paper that long speech would take, and she agreed to do that.
Which also tells you something about her, that she cared, this champion of free markets and of capitalism, actually cared a great deal more about her getting her ideas out than she did about making money.
Absolutely. Money for her, I think, in her life, was a token of respect and influence. She lived very simply. She bought nothing. She and her husband, for the last 20 years of their lives, lived in a 2-bedroom high-rise apartment in Midtown Manhattan, and they never bought a house. They never bought anything.
Now, Ayn Rand also developed, later in her life, a very close-knit circle of young acolytes. Some people called it a cult. Would you call it a cult?
Yes, I would call it a cult. It was a group of people who adhered entirely to her ideas, even had to ask each other or her what the answer was when they weren't sure what she would think about something. She decided what movies they would see and what people they would marry, or at least she had to give her permission before they did it. She was tyrannical and demanded loyalty.
Can you paint a picture of what it would have been like at that time to be part of Ayn Rand's inner circle? I mean, what did these people do? What did they talk about?
I think it would have been suffocating. At first, the group that formed around her listened to her on Saturday nights as she read from Atlas Shrugged while she was writing it. Later on, they met in her apartment, which was small and kind of dingy and didn't smell very good, to tell you the truth, to talk about her ideas. And they raised their hands when they wanted to say something. And either Ayn or Nathaniel Brandon, who was her chief deputy, would call on them. And they would very much try to please her.
It's slightly disturbing to think that one of the people who was sitting slavishly at her feet was Alan Greenspan, who went on to lead the Federal Reserve for 2 decades. How much was Alan Greenspan's thinking influenced by Ayn Rand?
I think it was influenced a lot by Ayn Rand. I don't think he sat slavishly as the others did. He was a little bit older. He was well established as an economist. And he didn't spend as much time with her as others did. But he was married to a close follower, and he certainly came on Saturday nights and listened to Atlas Shrugged and talked about her ideas. He wrote a series of essays for her newsletter that she published, explaining how her moral and economic ideas applied to some of the contemporary issues of the day. For example, he wrote about how we should go back on a gold standard because it keeps governments from inflating the currency and robbing us all of our property. And he wrote an essay about how we don't need antitrust laws because businessmen who have long-term interests will always be honest so that they will maintain their reputations, you know, and be in business forever. It was that essay that I heard him contradict and sort of take back last fall when he gave testimony before the Congress. He said, I was wrong about that. I was wrong about businessmen regulating themselves. I found that stunning, that something he had thought 45 years ago was something that he still thought today and was recanting.
Ayn Rand's personal story sort of devolved into a kind of psychodrama after a while. She married sort of on the young side, but as an middle-aged woman, her chief acolyte, Nathaniel Brandon, who came to her first as a very young man, 18 or 19, she wound up taking him as a lover in a very open kind of affair. This was something she, her husband, Nathaniel Brandon, and his wife sat around and discussed?
Yes. Yes, it just shows you the power of Ayn Rand's ability to convince people of things. She convinced her husband and Nathaniel's wife that this was a necessity for her, that she had suffered writing her great works and had never had a real love affair of the kind that she wanted and needed, and that she deserved this, and she knew they wouldn't stand in her way, and it would be over quickly. They all said, yes, okay. Nathaniel was 24 at that time, and Rand was 49. So she was 25 years older than he was. And it went on not for a little while, but for 14 years.
And he eventually left her, correct?
Yes, it ended explosively when a 38-year-old Nathaniel Brandon married to his childhood sweetheart, more or less, and having this affair with Rand, fell in love with a young actress who was a student of objectivism. He hid this from both his wife and Ayn Rand for as long as he could, but she found out, and not only did she slap him and throw him out of her cult, but the entire cult fell apart, blew up and scattered, and it never was the same again.
Hmm. Any biographer spends years of their own life absorbed in the life of the person they're writing about. And it's a complex relationship. And Ayn Rand herself was an incredibly complex woman. In the end, did you like her?
Did I like her? No. No, I didn't like her. I didn't really admire her. I wouldn't want to have known her. I think her philosophy as a whole is repugnant. But there are things about her that I do admire. Not her personal self, that's for sure.
And why should we still pay attention to her?
Well, I think she means different things to different people. But if you happen to be a liberal, she is very useful in helping us to check our premises, if you will, about how government is good and government can help and government should do more and more. Because remember, she grew up in a place where government was everything. I think her thinking about that is very interesting warning to the rest of us about where we should end and the state should begin. She's a fantastic psychologist of mediocrity. Her villains are much more amusing than her heroes are, in my opinion. So when she's describing what's wrong with the world she's in or creating, she's really at her best.
Howard Roark is guilty by his very nature. It was his duty to sacrifice his own desires and to contribute any ideas we demanded of him on any terms we chose. Who is society? We are. Man can be permitted to exist only in order to serve others. He must be nothing but a tool for the satisfaction of their needs. Self-sacrifice is the law of our age. The man who refuses to submit and to serve, Howard Roark, the supreme egoist, is the man who must be destroyed.
A scene from the movie adaptation of The Fountainhead. Anne Strangechamps talked with Ann Heller, whose biography is called Ayn Rand and the World She Made.